You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Like the sound of their name, Joe and Carol Rich are rich, and for the last 25 years, they've made the New York City public school system one of the main beneficiaries of their good fortune. In 1992, long before anyone was talking about charter schools, the Riches developed and helped pay for a badly needed new public elementary school in Brooklyn, the first New York City public school ever created by private individuals. The Riches, who have since become leaders in the charter school movement, recount their experience in their new book called Getting to Bartlett Street. It's published by February Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings them to our show today. Hello. And I should disclose right from the start that I borrowed the joke about the pronunciation of your last name from a story the New York Times published in 1990 about the opposition you were running into trying to convince the city to accept the new school you wanted to create. Carol, were you surprised by just how difficult the process was and by how much politics was involved?
Yes, I thought it was a perfectly reasonable idea to put a school in a neighborhood that needed one. And I couldn't understand the opposition. I just didn't expect it at all.
You called the school Beginning with Children. Where did that name come from?
From our youngest daughter, because that's what we hope to do. I don't think you can get a child in school early enough into a good school.
So Joe, you've said that you were inspired to get involved in public education in 1987 when you read a New York Times article about the I Have a Dream program that Eugene Lang had started. Do you remember what it was about Mr. Lang's work that drew you to that program?
Well, I wanted to do something philanthropic with my life, but I didn't want to just write a check. And I read that article, and it just rang very true to me. He was working with the children and changing their lives. And that seemed like a great opportunity.
And you'd recently retired as head of an investment firm that you'd founded. So were you looking around for things that you could do with the money?
Yeah. Well, not just with the money, but with the time. That was equally important to me.
Carol, at that time, you were president of the Lexington School for the Deaf and held a PhD in developmental psychology. Although you agreed to work with Joe on the I Have a Dream project, weren't you concerned from the start that you'd be reaching the children too late in their development to really have a meaningful impact on them?
You're right. I listened to his presentation and I thought, but I'd been married long enough not to say, that's a crazy idea. It's too late. And it turns out it really wasn't too late.
How old are the students by the time you begin working with them?
And I Have a Dream?
Mm-hmm.
They were in seventh grade.
Oh, so that is pretty late.
Yes.
And some of them have really fallen behind by then.
Very far.
Joseph, how did you go about finding a class of students to sponsor? Were you looking for specific kinds of students or a certain type of community?
We were looking for a neighborhood that needed it and where there was a good community-based organization which we could partner with. And we found that in Williamsburg.
In South Williamsburg, we should point out, which is still less trendy than the North Side.
It was called the Dead Zone then.
And where are we talking about? Somewhere around
Division
Avenue?
South 4th Street.
South 4th Street. Now, there was PS 19 nearby, wasn't there? Around.
Well, Junior High School 50 on South 3rd
Street. Which I attended, by the way.
You did?
Yeah. And I went to 19 and 16, and then I went to Eastern District High School. So I was educated in Williamsburg.
Congratulations.
Well, it wasn't that bad. What was the area like when you were there in the late 1980s, early 1990s?
There was the Marcy Housing Project across from the Pfizer. You're familiar with it. Across from the Pfizer building. It had one of the highest murder rates in housing projects. And there was Eastern District, which also had a very high murder rate. And the drug dealers were out on the sidewalks with their tables selling drugs.
So were you ever afraid for your safety?
No. I had a bag that had Kermit. You know Kermit? And that's I walked the streets with our principal, Sonia Gallardo, and Kermit. And I believe that Kermit was my patron saint. I was never frightened.
Kermit the Frog?
Kermit the Frog.
From Sesame Street.
That's the one.
Now, who lives in this area? I know the Hasidic community has been expanding in South Brooklyn, but they send their children to yeshivas, don't they, which are private schools?
Yes, they do.
But the situation was that they really had the power. from what turned out to be a criminal operation that they were running with the district superintendent in District 14.
Not all the Hasidim. You mean a group?
A subset.
Yeah.
Several thousand of them. And they were on the payroll. They turned the money over to the Rebbe, and they kept the health insurance. This went on for 20 years. It was we didn't find it out until we'd been there for
a And where was decade. The money supposed to go? To the local schools?
Yes.
Yes.
So what was happening to local schools? I know Eastern District was eventually closed down because it was an underperforming school. But was it simply that it just wasn't getting the funding it was supposed to have?
They weren't getting the fund. I had never set foot in a New York City public school till we began this I Have a Dream project. So it was – I didn't have anything to compare it to, but it sure didn't look like the kids were getting much attention and much learning.
You hadn't been in a public school at all? You went to private schools? You sent your kids?
I grew up in West Virginia, and I went to terrible public schools there. Uh-huh. But we had sent our children to private – our three daughters to private school in New York.
And were you hoping to start a school that you might be able to send your kids to? Or?
Yes. A school that we would want to send by then our grandchildren to.
So what did you see the school that you were going to do to create doing? Was it just going to improve upon what the public schools did?
No. We wanted to start from scratch. We wanted every child who came in there to be recognized, identified, and we told them every single day, you can be whatever you want to be as long as you finish school. And we let the parents come in. Remember the yellow lines in front of public schools? We didn't have one. We wanted the parents in the building.
And you promised to pay for the students' college tuitions if they graduated?
No.
That was the I Have a Dream program, mm-hmm. and we carried through with that. But when we recognized how far behind the kids were, we said, we got to get them earlier. For once in our marriage, she was right.
So mentoring was an important part of this whole process.
Well, we wanted to get the kids for the full... We saw what was happening to them between 8:45 and 3 o'clock, and we knew we had to get that time for ourselves. So we had the idea, we'll start a school. And it was crazy.
And, Carol, you've said that you became convinced that you had to do more for the children in South Williamsburg, when you overheard a woman standing outside the school refer to them, the kids, as garbage.
I know exactly what you're referring to. We came out of a meeting, an assembly, and some people behind us said, I don't know why they care about these kids. They can't do anything with them. They're all garbage. And that was so shocking that I don't even have the words to describe it.
So would it have been much easier to build the school privately and then have students attend on full scholarships, Joe?
I thought that was wrong. There was a private school in Chicago had just been started by a businessman.
Joe Kelman.
Kelman. And I went out to talk to him, and he had ideas that we would have maybe a chain of these schools around the country. But it seemed to me that wasn't a solution to the basic problem that existed for children of poverty in urban areas. There was plenty of money. The school system was spending $15,000, $16,000. And if you took the kids out, left the money in, it just made the problem worse.
But then you had to work with the Board of Education, and that meant dealing with a complicated bureaucracy, didn't it?
A complicated, in this case, a criminal bureaucracy.
Were you saying the whole New York City Board of Education was a criminal activity?
No. I'm saying that the whole District 14 that mm-hmm. we were working with was operating a criminal scam.
Were other people aware of that?
No.
Did you report it to the Brooklyn DA?
No, he found out, and he's the one that did the prosecuting. We knew we were up against something, but we didn't know what it was.
Well, on the other hand, if you clean that whole thing up, and then built a private school, took 300 or so children out of the public system, then the strapped public system would have more money to devote to the other kids, wouldn't it?
But they were wasting the money. They were spending it in the wrong way, and it wasn't getting to the children's basic needs.
And the school board was also giving schools for $1 a year to the Hasids.
Now, I'm not sure I understand. If Hasidim weren't sending their children to the local schools, how did they even get into the process? Because we vote for the people on our school boards?
Because they vote.
They vote as a block, and they voted more heavily. I think they represented 25% of the population, but they controlled the school board elections, which were held in May. I would guess 4 or 5% of the people voted in them. And so if you have a strong, organized voting block, you'll be able to carry the day, as they did.
My guests are Joe and Carol Rich, spelled R-E-I-C-H. Their book, Getting to Bartlett Street, Our 25-Year Quest to Level the Playing Field in Education, is a foreword by Joel Klein. So how long did the process of starting the new school take from the time you and Carol came up with the idea to the time that the doors first opened?
4.5 years.
You did have a lucky break, Carol, when Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, gave you a building that it owned.
They had been clients of Joe's, and they said, why don't you go out to our former plant? And we went into a meeting where there was a map on the wall. There was no school in the rezoning. And one of them took their hand and said, here, you can have this. And I thought he meant the table, which was really nice. And he said, no, I mean the 40,000-square-foot building.
So that was on Bartlett Street. That's where your title, Getting to Bartlett Street, is all about. Okay, so you have a building at no expense. Did that speed up the approval process?
No.
Actually, right after we got this gift from Pfizer, we were at the White House as part of Eye of a Dream trip to the White House. And the new school's chancellor, Joe Fernandes, got up and mentioned our school and what a wonderful thing it was. But he didn't know what he had inherited. He had just come to New York. He couldn't get anybody to go out and look at the building for 3 months.
And then District 14, the people you say were running a criminal operation, they were not enthusiastic about this project.
But they
they wouldn't have control over it?
Yes, and they're very clever. They never leave fingerprints. So they just stall you and offer to schedule another meeting and then cancel the meeting and nothing takes place.
So how did you get around to all of that?
We sent a fax. In those days, 20 people would see a fax before you saw the fax. And that irritated the bureaucrats to a tremendous degree. They were now officially embarrassed. And that's how it happened.
So how many students did you start with?
50.
Was it difficult to convince parents to send their children to a brand new school?
Leonard, they were so desperate that when we couldn't open on time because the construction wasn't finished, they sent their kids into Eastern District.
How many students are in the school now?
420, I think.
Now, you have really gotten involved in the charter school movement. There are critics who say that there are problems that they see with charter schools, and I'd like to hear your response to some of those criticisms, that charter schools, due to their small size and limited numbers, provide only some families with public school choice options, raising issues of fairness and equity, that they're not accountable as they're freed from rules and regulations intended to ensure quality in public education. They have an unfair advantage when competing against district public schools since they tend to be smaller and free of regulations. They have access to federal funds and other revenue sources that make it easier for them to function. Joe, you want to start? I can give you a few more.
This is a program in itself. Charter schools are not a panacea. There are good ones and there are bad ones. New York was the 35th or 6th state to get a charter law, and Governor Pataki was a real hero and got a very good law in. It had two authorizers, so it meant that they were in competition with in allowing schools to start. And when Joel Klein became chancellor under Mike Bloomberg and the mayor got control of the schools, Joel made space available for charter schools in existing school buildings.
So how many are there now in New York City?
It's 138, and by the time Mike leaves as mayor, there'll probably be 175. Mm-hmm. But the thing I think you should remember, we're the mouse that roared. It gets a lot of attention and a lot of screaming and yelling, But we're educating 3% of the children in New York City, and we're giving hope and a choice in areas where it didn't exist before.
Well, some of the schools, I'm sure, are wonderful, but one of the statistics you provide in your book is on 2010 achievement data, where district schools score 44% in language arts and charter schools score 45%, just one percentage difference. Why don't we see a bigger differential there?
I'm not sure. They keep changing the tests.
It's in your book.
No, I know, but I'm not sure why that's true. They keep changing the tests. Some tests have become so important that in some schools they teach to the test. That's not what you want coming out of a school. You want a kid who could think.
You're opening a second school now?
Third.
A third. So,
well, Carol and I have stepped down from active management. It figures for 2012 are much better than the ones that you have there, but they came out after the book was written.
And what are they? What's the differential now? I see bar graphs there. Some are higher. Some of the bars are higher than others.
Charter schools exceed in every grade in every subject, but I don't think
is that because the classes are smaller.
Yes, partly. To teach 35 children is impossible.
The biggest thing is that everybody that's in that building wants to be in the building. Carol devised the first lottery. And the number of children on waiting lists in all these schools is amazing. I don't think we're fooling dumb parents.
If anything, an advantage you have is that you're getting kids who are more motivated to do well, because their parents want them to do well. One of the complaints that we hear from teachers in some public schools is that on parent-teacher nights, few parents show up. They have no sense that parents are getting their kids to do their homework. And I would imagine that's less of a problem with a school like yours.
It is not a problem because we invited them in from the beginning. We want to know what they think. What do they need? It should be a dialogue. What do you have to tell us about Jose?
And we tell these kids over and over again from the time they enter the first grade that they can be anything.
So where are these other schools that you've opened? Are they near the school on Bartlett Street?
No.
When the charter law passed, we opened the second school. And then when the new mayor came in, we found an opportunity to open a center to support all of the schools in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And when Joel came in, there were, I think, 18 charter schools in New York, and they're now close to 180 by the time Mike leaves. These schools are concentrated in areas of high need, and they have long waiting lists. And I think the argument that if you can't give choice to everybody, you should give it to nobody, that's a horrible idea. We want to see it expand so it is available to everybody.
And I think the ways we teach are beginning to, I don't know another word for this, leach out into the other parts of the district.
They become an example for
yes.
other schools.
Yes.
And is the criminal situation, has that been cleared up?
That Joe's referring to?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a lot easier now, I suspect, for you to deal with the local district.
Well, the districts have lost most of their authority under the reorganization since mayoral control came in 2002.
Thank you both so much for being with us, Joe and Carol Rich. Their book, Getting to Bartlett Street, Our 25-Year Quest to Level the Playing Field in Education, it's published by February Books.
Thank you.
Thank you.